the more we increase that percentage from 6 to 8, or what, you know, at one point there was a reference to 10, you are given a more predictable situation. But I right now I think 6 might be right, especially hearing what 4% did.
Presumptive 6, but then also running numbers 4, 4, and 8, as I understand it. Okay, so
correct.
I'm just now just trying to kind of narrow us and get us in. So Judge Buckley has made the motion. I'm not sure it's been seconded as we have refined the motion. Kim Turner, do I see you seconding?
Yep.
All right. And now, is there anybody that has questions about the exact parameters of the motion? Because it's now we have a motion that's been moved and seconded and open for discussion. I want to make sure everybody feels they understand the motion as it's pending. Any requests for clarification or redefinition?
Judge Conklin, this is Chris Rule again, and I'm sorry to keep coming back to this. I just want to make sure I understand the rationale conceptually. Why? Because there's going to be courts that are above whatever band we choose and land on. There are courts that will be different distances above that band. There will be some courts that come close to that band, some courts that are further above that band. That why wouldn't we apply the same graduated methodology as we're planning to apply in giving the benefit to the courts below the band, so that courts further above the band, you know, we put a 1% cap on it, but courts closer to the band wouldn't necessarily take up to that full 1%. Because what I'm hearing in the motion is that any court that's above that band just takes an additional 1% across the board. So I just want to better understand the rationale for treating those two groups differently.
Sherry, did you want to address that?
Yeah, you know, I actually agree with Chris in the sense that, and I guess using Chris's example of 4%, I think 6% would do the same thing. If you said that you were going to not take them into the band, that would by default, and it was limited at a 1% cut, that would in fact do what Chris is saying. So those closest to the top of the band would take a smaller cut because you're not going to take them into the band. So that's why I really like Judge Buckley's discussion of running three, or Kim's, or whomever it was, three scenarios, because the smaller the band, the larger the group. But if you graduate it, it's going to have more courts above the band. But if you do it in a graduated fashion, there will be small but more impact. So I think, you know, I see what Chris is saying, and I think that is a good approach. I don't know if Judge Buckley would amend his motion, but that I see that there's value in doing that, so that it doesn't drop you way into the band. You're stopped at the top of the band.
Rebecca, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to clarify with Judge Buckley on your motion. For those who would be moving down that are above the band, is there a possibility they would move below the median? Because I believe, and I'm looking for the language, and I'm sorry I cannot place it right now, but I think there is language that when we do new money, they don't, and we apply to the lower court, to the courts below the line first, they go up to the median. So would we be bringing the courts above the line down to the median and then stop, or is there a possibility they could go below the median? And I'm just clarification on your motion.
So I'm very open to the Chris's friendly amendment that no court would take, no court above the band would take a percentage that would bring them, well, I guess you're saying, yeah, into the band. So that if they're 0.5%, it would make a difference. You know, we would adjust accordingly. I will defer to CEOs and others to maybe say that in a better way. But I'm open that those that are very close to being above the band would not get the full 1%. Sort of an equity as to that as well. How to articulate that, I'm not quite sure I can do that. But I'm open to that friendly amendment.
I'm sorry. So Kim, go ahead, and then I don't know who else had their hand up. Kim Turner, go ahead.
So I'm glad we're trying to flesh out all the ways that this thing could go a little bit hinky. I think until we actually see the numbers, it's hard to conceptualize. I get where Rebecca's coming from, you know, but this idea of a court above the band getting close to or maybe passing the median, I think until we actually see how these scenarios play out, it's going to be hard to actually include that in the motion, because I just don't know what the impact is yet. So I'm wondering if we can just maybe set that concern aside until we actually have some numbers to look at.
Because as I understand, Rebecca, what you're saying, there's a difference, and I think we all understand this, but I want to make sure we do. There's a difference between being in the band and above or below the median. The median is a very precise dollar amount. So you can easily be within the band and above or below the median. And I anticipate that there might be a situation where you remain in the band, but you go below the median or above it.
Yes.
Or
perhaps just above the band and come perhaps just below the median. And I'm just looking for some direction specifically
so Rebecca,
for staff so that we know.
Median.
So go ahead, Sherry. Well, I'm sorry.
We're not talking about median. We're saying, according to Chris's thoughts, which I think are right on, if you come down to the top of the band, that ends your additional percentage. So it might be 0.015 plus the pro rata. So
go ahead,
in other words,
and that's the, sorry, go ahead. So that's the clarification I'm looking for, so that when staff is calculating, we can just be very specific as to where does it stop? Does it stop at the top of the band, or does it stop at the median within the band?
I mean, my proposal is it stops at the top of the band.
Or the bottom
of
the band.
I would agree with that, especially if you use the lower percentage, like 4 or even 6.
Okay. And Kim, turn it,
yeah,
did I see your hand
Rebecca,
up?
Yeah, sorry, Rebecca, I didn't understand what you were saying. Now that I understand, I agree.
I didn't articulate it very well. I was just trying to figure out what we needed to be able to provide to Brandy and her group, but I'm sure she will tell us if she does not understand it, but I just wanted to be specific.
And by the way, folks, I know it's a little afternoon. I'd really like to conclude this before we take our brief lunch break. So I'm just reading to everybody. I've got in front of me the allocation methodology for the good years when there's new money. The first 50%, I know we're not dealing with that anymore, but the language it uses will be scaled by court's distance from the statewide average and size based on the court's workload formula need. So as I understand what Sherry has said is that exact language will be scaled by the court's distance is applied to those courts above by Chris's request and below. Scaled from the distance from the statewide average, which to use Rebecca's language is the exact median. So it'll be scaled. Is that consistent, Judge Buckley and Kim Turner, with what you understand to be the motion in the second?
Yes.
Yes, that is what I understand.
So now I believe we have, and I'm going to refer now to Brandy to see if Brandy or anybody on staff needs further clarification. I believe we now have the parameters of the motion dealing with, and again, we're dealing with a specific number of a cut, but it could be anything, which is why it's so important to create a policy. Whatever the ultimate reduction is in the governor's budget, the allocation methodology for that cut will be as defined in the motion. So it's been moved.
Holman, and members, this is Brandy. I do want to clarify a couple of things. I understand that courts above the band will not go into the band, but can you please confirm if courts within the band can drop below it?
No, they're pro rata.
Right.
Does that answer your question, Brandy? So you could
yes.
move, I guess, conceivably, you could move above the band by the pro rata cut, but there's no circumstance can you move below the band with a pro rata cut?
No.
Never say never, but I don't see mathematically how that could happen.
I agree. Okay. So Brandy, do you now have what you have, what you think you need to consider the motion?
Just one other question is, are we going to continue the pro rata reduction based on allocations as we did from the FMS meeting?
So in other words, is the pro rata based upon allocation? Kim, I see a look of...
I
don't understand the question.
Are you asking us whether we're going to approve the recommendation that came to this committee? Because I think what we're proposing is an alternate way to do
right.
this.
Currently, the reduction that we did that came to the committee today was based on allocations, not based on court's need. So it works out a little differently. If a court needs a higher amount of money, but they're receiving less, then if we apply the reduction based on what they're actually getting, they won't take as large of a reduction. So I wasn't sure if we were going to maintain that approach or work by need.
So Brandy, my suggestion, this is Sherry, is that we use the same formula that you've been using for new money. So I'm not sure, how have you been doing that for allocating new money?
It's based on need, Sherry.
Yeah, so that's what I would use, because I would be consistent in every way that we can with prior policies that we've developed.
Thank you.
I agree with that.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I do have one clarification.
Judge Barton, go ahead.
Yes, and it's been discussed, and I just want to make sure it's clear that this, we would have another live conference to consider this information. As opposed to an email vote or something like that.
Well, let's talk about timing. So let's work backwards from the council, Brandy. The council meeting is July 23rd. So when do we have to have this to the council?
So I'm trying to work that out behind the scenes, Judge Conklin and membership. We typically are looking to have our draft report to the executive in planning committee as they develop the council agenda, and they are meeting after next week. So technically materials should be to them no later than next Friday. If we wanted to do another live meeting, we're required to post 5 business days in advance, so we would need to post either today or tomorrow. If we did do an action by email between meetings, we can post a day in advance so we can have something together a little sooner.
Does an action by email allow us, what's the discussion window for an action by email?
The discussion window as far as communications with one another?
Yes.
We ask that you wait until the voting is open and that conversations are held with all of the membership in the email exchanges.
Kim Turner.
Judge Conklin, I strongly urge us to have another Blue Jeans meeting or something. I think this is it's a very dense and we need to be walked through these proposals. I think it would be very hard to do this kind of a decision by email. So if maybe to post notice 5 business days today and have another meeting like next Thursday so that we can get materials to E&P by, did you say by Friday, Brandy?
So let's just talk about calendar dates rather than Fridays and Fridays.
Okay.
So Brandy, when do we have to post our materials?
In time for
a Blue Jeans meeting to remain consistent with the Judicial Council schedule?
It's 5 days in advance, so I would have to have at least the notice and agenda posted by today to have a meeting next Thursday or by tomorrow to have a meeting next Friday.
But it would just be the agenda. That would not.
Yes, materials don't have to post until 3 days prior, Judge Buckley.
How does everybody look on Friday, June 12th for a Blue Jeans meeting?
You mean
19th. I'm sorry, Friday the 19th for a Blue Jeans meeting. Wherever you may be, on the beach or in, which you probably aren't, but in your offices or cubicles.
Thank you.
So we would We would then ask staff, with apologies in advance, to post the agenda by tomorrow, the 12th. The materials would be posted, did you say the day before, Brandy?
3 days before.
The materials would be posted Tuesday, the 16th, by close of business for a Blue Jeans meeting. And I can think we can just put it over the lunch hour on Friday, June 19th at 12 noon. So that's the motion.
But wait, John, does that give staff enough time to get this into the hands of E&P that afternoon? Would it be better to do Thursday afternoon and give them a little time to put together the material?
If we do Thursday the 18th, we have to have the agenda posted today and the materials posted.
I'm just saying staff should answer the question, but I think it's easier for them to get an agenda this afternoon than turn around the material to E&P within a couple hours.
Brandy?
I obviously defer to the staff.
I appreciate that, Judge Buckley. I'm thinking about it, and I think that I hate to do this, but I just might have to defer back to you guys. We'll definitely do whatever is necessary. We could, an option if we wanted to do a Thursday meeting, in order to meet the open meeting rules, we could have, say, a 2 p.m. meeting next Thursday to give us a couple of hours today to post that agenda. That does buy us time on the end of this process. But I think I'll leave it up to you guys and your availability.
So it'd be a meeting next Thursday, June 18th, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Blue Jeans.
That starts to be problematic.
Yeah, for me as well.
How about
the noon hours?
4:30 or 5 o'clock, something. Four o'clock. 4 o'clock meeting, so the judges are wrapping up their day.
That's more workable for the lunch hour.
Well, I hate to. The other option is first thing Friday morning, early. Before
I would say
4
Thursday. O'clock Thursday or Friday morning.
It's either 4 o'clock Thursday the 18th or 8 o'clock or earlier Friday the 19th. Brandy, do you have a preference? We got to defer to staff here, but candidly, they're the ones that are going to be working around the clock on this. So, Brandy, just be candid with us. Which one works better?
No preference on my end. Michelle, Oksana, I'm going to put you guys in the hot seat. Any preference on your end?
This is Michelle. I don't have a preference, but I think Thursday at 4 would be good, just on the off chance that we have to pivot and make any changes. We could at
Thursday
least
the 18th
have
4 o'clock
overnight.
It is. Okay, that Thursday the 18th, 4 o'clock. So now I hope everybody has the motion in mind. It's been moved and seconded. That would then be agendized for a meeting, a Blue Jeans meeting, on Thursday, June 18th at 4 p.m. The agenda to be posted, the agenda for that meeting, and the materials to be for that meeting to be posted in conformity with existing rules for open meetings. Any further discussion on the motion?
Judge Conklin, it's Chris Rule. I'm sorry to raise one more question, but I'm noting that from the FMS committee last week, when the FMS committee approved the pro rata methodology, they approved it according to the workload allocation. Remember, there were the two tables side by side. There was a workload formula, allocating pro rata by workload formula, or allocating it by workload allocation. FMS committee recommended it be done by workload allocation. Are we now recommending it be done by workload formula?
Well,
that was what Sherry and I believe Kim Turner also agreed on. Workload formula is another term for need. So that's the latest information that we have in an effort to stay consistent.
Okay.
Chris, I think it's important we stick with processes in providing relief to the courts under the ban that follows the same formulas that we have used before, because that way we're remaining consistent, at least in that piece. We're trying to be consistent as best we can.
All right, Chris, thanks for that clarification. And is that consistent with your motion, Judge Buckley, and your second, Kim?
Yes.
Yes, great. It is.
Okay. That's it. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? And any opposition to the motion as stated and the procedure related to that motion? Okay, I've heard no opposition, so that motion, as now summarized, stated, and procedurally calendared, is approved. What I'm going to do now, folks, is, I don't know, what do you want, 10 minutes? 15?
Sorry,
we're
just
going to take a break. Go ahead, Kim.
With the materials that we get next week, can that motion be, you know, the written motion? It's such a complicated motion. Can it be actually drafted and sent out to the TICBAC members so that we actually have it with all of its various component parts? I think that would be a helpful thing to have in the packet.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it'll be in the report as the written recommendation for the motion. Yep.
Judge Conklin,
okay.
Go ahead. Can I ask a question of JCC staff that in preparing and providing the calculations on the different bands, can you also provide the algorithm that you use in making those calculations?
You know, I think that's an internal matter, Chris. I don't mean to speak for staff, but I don't think we've ever disclosed an algorithm, not to be secretive in any way. But it's so complicated, I don't mean to speak for staff. Brandy?
Yeah, I'd prefer to handle that offline if we can, please.
Okay.
All right.
That's
great.
Fine. Now we can have an offline about that.
Great. Okay, so folks, tell you what, I show it's 1225. I don't mean to press us, but we obviously have the $50 million that we now need to talk about. I so appreciate the thoughtfulness that went into that. So don't lose your momentum. Don't have such a big lunch that you come back groggy. But is 15 minutes enough for everybody, or would you prefer 20? How about 12:45? Does that work better for everybody? 12:45. So we're going to take whatever time that is, which I show to be 21 minutes. I'm being very careful here, folks. Is what we're going to do now is you're going to see a banner, but you all please do not sign off. That would be a problem. So mute your screen, mute your microphone, and mute your video with those buttons, but don't sign off. And then we'll come back at 12:45 to continue the meeting. So please don't sign off. Please just mute your screen and your video, 12:45. Thank you. like we're all coming back on timely. We'll wait just a minute.
No.
More wonderful faces to pop up, and then we'll get started. All right. I hate to be so precise on time, but we've got quite a bit of work to do, and it's 12:45. Brandy, are you on?
I am, Judge, and I believe we need to let IT know when we are ready to broadcast live again.
So do we need to do a supplemental roll call just to make sure we have enough members on to proceed?
I'm happy to do so.
Okay, great. So do we start the recording before that?
Yes, please.
All right, and I know before we start the recording, I'm so sorry we're getting started so quickly. I know some of you probably even had a chance to eat, but you know what? We're human, so eat. If you need to have lunch while we're on the meeting, you do that in an open room anyway, so just proceed accordingly.
And
with that, Brandy, if we could start the
Yes, IT has confirmed that we are now live.
And that means we're recording. I see the red button up, so we are. So I just want to make sure that we proceed with a quorum. I've asked Brandy to take a secondary roll call.
Judge Conklin.
Present.
Ms. Fleming.
Present.
Judge Barton.
Here.
Judge Buckley.
Here.
Judge Cope. Judge Fannin.
Here.
Judge Gabe.
Here.
Judge Heinrichs.
Here.
Judge Kelly.
Here.
Judge Martinez?
Here.
Judge Ryan? Judge Ryan? Judge Thompson?
Here.
Ms. Bartleson?
Here.
Ms. Carter? Ms. Eberhardt?
Judge Ryan's here. Judge Ryan's here. Sorry.
Ms. Carter? Ms. Eberhardt?
Here.
Mr. Finke?
Here.
Mr. Landry?
Here.
Mr. Planet?
Here.
Mr. Rule?
Here.
Mr. Gucci?
Here.
Mr. Taylor?
Here.
Ms. Turner?
Here.
Mr. Yamasaki?
Here.
Advisory members, Mr. Wardwell? And Mr. Theodorovich?
Here.
So, Judge Conklin, it looks like we do not have Sherry back on yet.
And do we have John Wardlaw on, or was he on before?
He was on before.
And Sherry, have you joined us again? All right, well, I'm sure she will. We clearly have a quorum.
Yes.
So, and is Oksana with us?
Sam.
Great. So, folks, now what we're doing is taking the secondary item on this one agenda item, and that is the $50 million in COVID backlog funding allocation methodology. Oksana?
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Oksana Tak, Senior Budget Analyst with Budget Services. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic, the judicial branch had to radically change its operations to protect court users while maintaining access to justice. Action taken by the Judicial Council and trial courts to protect the public and court staff have resulted in delays in court operations and a backlog of cases that will take time for courts to process as they continue to comply with public health and safety directives. To assist courts in addressing the backlog of filing that have accumulated due to court closures and help them resume normal operations, the May revision includes one-time funding of $50 million from General Fund in 2020-21. During the Funding Methodology Subcommittee meeting on June 2, 2020, several allocation methodology options for COVID-related backlog funding were discussed. The subcommittee is recommending to the TIGBAC a workload allocation that allocates the first 50% to courts below the statewide average funding level, scaled by court's distance from the statewide average and size based on the court's SN workload formula, with the remaining 50% funding allocated to all courts based on the workload formula, which includes Cluster 1 courts and excludes the base funding floor courts. This is a workload approach recognizing that courts below the statewide average funding level have less funding to deal with their COVID-related backlogs than those courts above the average funding line. The committee's recommendation today will be presented to the Judicial Council for approval during its scheduled business meeting in July. That concludes the second part of our presentation. Budget Services Management is available to assist in answering any questions.
Oksana, thank you so much. So now let's taking this item separately, open up for discussion on the recommendation from FMS. And again, reminder, we have Judge Buckley and Rebecca who were at that meeting, as well as many of you.
Judge Conklin, this is John Wardlaw, just letting you know I'm with you.
Thanks so much, John, appreciate it.
Judge Conklin, could I speak on this item?
David. Please, thanks.
Yeah, so this was another item that FMS did take up, and I know that there was a very hearty discussion and a thorough analysis about how to deal with these resources. And originally, the motion that ultimately passed was one of those that I did not vote in favor of, just full disclosure. And here's the reason, and I wanted to make sure that I had a chance to speak to that. The money, as I understand it, was intended to be made available to courts that have been hit by the pandemic, and all of us have been hit probably in varied levels, but certainly all of us have been adversely impacted as a result of the closure. And in that regard, my position was that the monies be made available to all of the courts using a pro rata formula. The way that we have dealt historically, and I know we talk about history in our past practice, is that we deal with ongoing funding using a formula that considers 50% of the money going to everybody and 50% going to those courts below the average. But I view this as a little differently, and this money is very specifically intended for a specific purpose. And in situations where monies have been made available to the branch for specific purposes, it was made available to all of the courts. And by way of example, monies related to court reporters in family, that money was made available to all of the courts. Monies that were made available for Prop 47, again, all of the courts were able to receive a portion of that funding. Monies that have been made available as relates to marijuana convictions has been made on a pro rata basis to all of the courts. And if we're going to look at this money differently and pull that into the formula, the workload funding formula, by using the 50-50 split, I think it deviates us away from the practices that we have adopted in the past. And for that reason, for those reasons, I think that this particular item necessitates the distribution of the money for all of the courts on a pro rata basis. All of us have been harmed very significantly by the pandemic and the closure. All of us have massive backlogs that we're going to have to deal with. And I do think that my position is one that suggests that it proceed on a pro rata basis, which is contrary to perhaps what the recommendation was submitted earlier. Thank you.
All right, David, thank you. Further discussion?
Judge Conklin, this is Rebecca.
Go ahead.
I also voted against the recommendation of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, and the reason why is that the COVID money appears to be for that, and it not intended for an equity
adjustment of any kind. And regardless of where you fall on the funding scale, you may or may not have already had your outbreak of COVID, and hopefully you won't have it. But the fact is that if it's distributed by an equity-based model and you are a court that winds up having, I don't know, a nursing home in your area or a heavily populated, a prison that maybe has an outbreak, you know, the thing is that it has nothing to do with the equity model. And so, frankly speaking, it should be distributed so we can deal with what we have in our own counties on a pro rata basis. And so for that reason, I voted against it, and I continue to feel that it has zero correlation with equity.
All right, and I want to give everybody a chance to speak, but as I did before, I just want to provide as transparent information as possible. So I'm reading both from the finance letter that existed related to this funding and the May revision report in part. The finance letter concerning the $50 million to provide trial courts with one-time funding to address the backlog of cases stemming from reduced court services due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The judicial branch has taken various actions to reduce court operations, which has resulted, reading from the exact language, in the backlog of cases that will need to be addressed as court operations begin to resume. The funding will help the trial courts address this backlog. So, I don't see you on the screen,
yes.
But yeah, here you go. Ahead, Kim.
I was raising my hand. So I agree with David and Rebecca on this one. This is not an equity adjustment. This is not ongoing new funding coming to the courts. This is to address a very specific issue. I wish that we had better, data on which courts were more severely impacted. I wish there was a measurement that was available, but I don't think that there is, and I don't think that there's any way at this late date to develop some kind of a data model that would help us to distribute this money fairly to the courts that were most impacted by COVID-19. So my absent that kind of ability to analyze the impacts, I think a pro rata distribution is more fair than the 50% going to the courts below the line and 50% to everybody else, or to everybody.
And on the data points note, and I'll let either Judge Buckley or Rebecca comment if they care, Leah, I think, is still with us today. And Leah, I listened at the FMS meeting. Leah was there and very eloquently made the point that actually we don't have the very specific data points, nor do we have the time to develop them as is necessary to get this funding out immediately to those courts. And Leah did address that at the FMS meeting, to the point that, and Judge Buckley, I see you nodding your head yes, so obviously if you want to add anything to that, please do. Okay, that's nodding his head, no he doesn't.
Judge Conklin, this is Judge Heinrichs, and I actually support the recommendation. I actually think that when we look at it, the $50 million isn't anywhere near what courts
I'm sorry, Judge, when you say the recommendation, do you mean the recommendation in the materials or the ones?
The recommendation in the materials.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's because I don't think the $50 million is near what anybody's going to need at all. I think that that's going to be a sort of discussion point in regards to things, but I think an equitable distribution of the money, all the courts had some impact. There was a statewide closure. They all had to do things. They're all going to have to refurbish to physical distance and all of those things. And I think that those that have the least amount of money, just what was said by the council staff, the least amount of money have the least ability to do those things. And so for those reasons, I really think that the $50 million can be a drop in the bucket, and that ideally we are able to show what we've done with that and perhaps ask, be able to get some quick recovery. I'm being a Pollyanna, but quick recovery and have some turnarounds in the next year. I think that for this first round of what everybody's going to have to do to open their courts, that an equitable distribution is really more fair for the courts. And so I support the recommendation that was made by the committee.
Okay, so I'm just now going to speak as a member rather than the chair, please. And so I'm only speaking as a member. But with respect to Judge Heinrich's comments, I don't support the recommendation. I don't think anybody would disagree, though obviously I would open it up, that your COVID impact is not changed at all by whether you're above the line or below the line. That the way COVID, now maybe the way you react to that impact, there could be an argument that you have perhaps might not have the same resources as a court above the line that a court below, but we've all been impacted, and the impact, whether it be a nursing home or whether it be transportation of inmates or whether it be recalendering hundreds and thousands of backlog cases, we've all been impacted. And so I would not be adverse to perhaps having some type of supplemental language that requires a court to simply certify within a very brief time period that any money they're receiving was clearly needed and used for COVID backlog. But I am concerned that if we apply the 50-50 split that's set forth in the materials, a significant amount of the money is not being equally distributed, that a significant amount of the money is going, not that any court doesn't have a need, but I echo Rebecca's and David's remarks. I think pro rata provides the opportunity for, and again, that's why I read the language. The language does not talk about equity, and the language does not talk about in any of the things we've been concerned about in the past. It talks about the absolute need for every trial court to respond to COVID impact. And if we overlay equity on that, I think we detract from that message.
And my only response
is, John,
I'm sorry, who was that? You?
This is Sean Landry, but I think there's a follow-up.
So Jill, Jill and then Sean. Jill?
Okay, I would just like to say, when I read the materials yesterday, it struck me that it's true what Judge Buckley had alluded to. It struck me that the $50 million was sort of a compromise to appease the courts that were unhappy with the and I wasn't there, so I don't know, but that's what I read into it, that the $50 million on the 50-50 was a compromise to appease people who were dissatisfied with the pro rata split on the reduction. And we've now separated the two, and it seems to me that the policy reason for, and I like the nuanced methodology that Sherry has come up with that would address the dissatisfaction of those courts, but the $50 million doesn't seem to apply to our principal reason for doing the 50-50, which is about an ongoing split when we get ongoing money and we're going to float all of our boats and raise those who are below the line a little higher to improve the inequity. This is just about like any other one-time money for a specific purpose, and I think we should all share in it equally and just deal with it, whatever our unique situations are in our individual court. So I would support the pro rata rather than the proposal.
All right, and then now Sean, and then I think I saw Judge Buckley's hand up. Sean?
Yeah, so, and I concur with that. I think this money is different. It should be a pro rata. I'm glad we are not looking for data points, though, because COVID-19 is hitting us all differently. So the pro, in some cases, hasn't hit counties yet. So the pro rata approach is consistent, and it seems to make the most sense. It is different money than the money we were just talking about for the reduction. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Judge Buckley?
Before I make a comment, I was wondering if John Orlaw has any input as to any message that we're getting that could be discussed in an open meeting.
Good afternoon, members, and thank you, Judge, for the invitation to address you. So with regard, pretty much consistent with the conversation that's being had now, the intent of the money is very specific, is for COVID-related workload. I have not heard any conversation amongst the legislature about it tying to equity. It is about a pandemic and a across the state slowdown in workload associated with that, and a means to try to get money out to handle that workload so that the citizens can have justice served as quickly as possible. And so it has not been framed as an equity issue. It is a response to a pandemic emergency and making sure that that our courts are able to serve the people as necessary.
But I'm just looking at the chat conversation, and I'm turning now to David because David came up next on the chat. David?
Yeah, thank you very much, Judge Conklin. So,
and now I'll go to Judge Buckley.
Yeah, in view of the conversations that have taken place and certainly consistent with the points that I made earlier, I wanted to make a motion for the $50 million that has been made available to assist courts in dealing with the COVID-related backlog, that those monies be distributed to all courts on a pro rata basis.
All right, Judge Buckley, did you hold on? So Gabe seconded the motion from Mr. Yamasaki, but that doesn't mean it. All it means it's been moved and seconded. Thank you, Judge Buckley.
I was going to make a comment that we're in a situation where we are not able to gauge in any way how different courts reacted to it and how different courts are really, in essence, impacted. The only thing that we really can do is trying to see how courts can deal with the problem. Hence, you could make, I think, a well-reasoned argument, as Judge Heinrich did, that those courts that are high above the average theoretically are able to deal with it better than those courts that are well below the average. But given the circumstances of everything, and I think it's best if we stand united on this and we do pro rata. So I would support the motion.
All right. So, and I'm going to turn to John Wardlaw on this, and at the same time, perhaps it would be a friendly amendment, but whether or not we should include within the language just some type of, as we have with similar one-time funding for a specific purpose, that the courts who receive this money within a certain time period simply either certify or affirm, whatever word you want to use, that the funds they received were used for COVID workload backlog. Kim Turner?
Judge Conklin? Oh, sorry.
So, Judge Conklin, I know that that suggestion is well-intentioned, but what I'm concerned about is that if you ask courts to certify, you know, that they'll use the money for COVID, then that may be followed up by, well, why can't we get to the court of exactly what courts did and how many backlog cases they dealt with and so forth. So I don't want to, this money has already been identified as for COVID-related purposes. I don't think there's a single court that doesn't have some adverse impact related to COVID. So I would respectfully suggest that we forego any kind of a certification or something that might then compel somebody to want some data about this, or, you know, put an additional burden. We're already collecting data about the costs related to COVID. I'd hate to have to start collecting the data on how many criminal cases had to be rewondered and how many UDs are, you know, on the docket and so forth. I think that would be, you know, a regrettable outcome of getting into some kind of certification process.
Fair enough. And I stated very broadly. I'm actually going to take a little prerogative here and turn to Nancy Eberhard as the chair of SEAC. Nancy, based upon what you've heard, do you have any doubt that if this money were distributed to the trial courts under either methodology, that there would be a single trial court that would not have in excess of that amount in COVID-related backlog workload?
Thanks for the opportunity to comment, Judge Conklin. Given what I've heard from the CEOs around the state, there is a significant COVID-19 expense that is happening. Even just with the FEMA applications and the different webinars going on, I have a feeling that this backlog amount of money will be used probably instantly for all of the different expenses that are out there.
Thank you. So though the $50 million is much appreciated and we hope stays as is, I was just trying to clarify that from your perspective or anybody's perspective, there doesn't appear to be any concern that a court has not experienced significant backlog workload that they would use the money for.
No concern.
And did I hear somebody else that wanted to speak? Rebecca?
I just wanted to ask for clarification from David on his motion and Judge Gabe. Your intention is to distribute all of the money in a single allocation, correct, according to your motion? And the reason I'm asking is because there was quite a conversation at Funding Methodology Subcommittee about that. And so I just want that to be clear.
Yeah, that was in fact my intention in making that motion. And I think the comment by Nancy about the fact that so many of us are going to be digging ourselves out of this backlog crisis that we have, we'll be spending it very quickly. So I think it would be appropriate to proceed in that manner.
Thank you, David. Neil, I think you wanted, I'm just trying to look and follow. Neil, did you want to make a comment?
Yes. In response to a lot of this, you know, originally at the FMS subcommittee meeting, I think I had voted it for the, not the pro rata, but the other one, the $50 million. But, in listening to David's comments, I'm swayed to go the other way. And part of it is because of this. We're all going to be absorbing a significant reduction in our budget, and this $50 million really is only going to slow the effect of that reduction. And whatever we can do, or all the courts can do to slow that reduction in order to get rid of our backlogs as quickly as possible, we're all going to need this funding. And that's why I think I'm kind of swayed to go with David's proposal.
All right, thanks, Neil. So right now there's a motion that's been seconded that the $50 million be distributed on a pro rata basis as expeditiously as possible. And before I ask for a vote, I want to just make sure everybody's had a chance to be heard or if anybody else wants to be heard.
So Judge Conklin, this is Sherry Carter. I wanted to know, I've been on the meeting the whole time. It made me redial in, so even though I could hear you, couldn't hear me. So I have been here the whole time for the person who's taking attendance.
Thank you.
I support David's motion. I do suggest, however, that in the minutes, we clearly articulate why every court has COVID workload backlog to make sure that those people within the branch and outside of the branch understand the difficult nature in trying to measure specifically how it impacts. It's incredibly difficult. And so I would just say for our minutes, we need to be really clear of all of the factors that are related to COVID that are impacting people so differently, and it's impossible to measure it exactly, but I do support David's motion.
So a good point, Sherry. And Leah, I think we still have you on the line. I want to make my recollection is from FMS that you did articulate that even though it's very difficult to get down to the into the weeds, so to speak, that based upon what you've seen, that it is the $50 million. There is at least if not more than a $50 million COVID workload backload need amongst the trial courts. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's right. Judge Conklin, this is Leah Rose Goodwin with Office of Court Research. So, one of the things that we did was we looked at the chief's directives and the actions that were taken mostly in March that had an impact on workload. So the things, really speaking, were that deadlines were extended, jury trials were suspended, there's expanded technology used to conduct proceedings remotely, and evictions and foreclosures were suspended. So using some of the parameters that we see in our workload model about, drawing from the FTE need in RAS and knowing what we do about volumes of the UD filings that result in evictions and numbers of jury trials typically heard, we could extrapolate that there is definitely enough workload in the courts to justify the $50 million in allocation. And the point that I had made about the data was that at the statewide level through GPSIS, we don't have measures of backlog that are reported by courts in a real-time manner that would allow us to pinpoint where those backlogs are occurring and what the size of them are. That's not to say that that information does not exist, and we see in the conversations that we've heard about the pandemic and some of the news articles that have come out that courts have described the various ways that backlog has impacted workload. But in terms of the data that I would have access to, it's we can't report on it and triangulate where those measures occur. But certainly, right. From what we hear from courts, it's more than evident that there is sufficient workload that has had to be deferred, paused, and would have to, occur in the court. When courts reopen, we certainly predict that there will be a surge of workload as courts try to work through cases that have been paused, plus attend to incoming workload. There's no doubt that there will be some sort of impact felt in the courts based on reopening.
Great, thanks very much. Nancy, I'm looking at the chat. You said you wanted to speak. Was that an old one, or did you want to make another comment?
No, I did want to make a new comment, if that's okay, and that is
of
to
course.
Say that I would support the motion that is before us right now, but I do want to just make a note that when you're looking at the funding of each of the courts and those that are kind of below that line, you have to understand that they are funded at a level where they don't have as many employees per need, and so therefore the work does not get done, I would say, in a quicker way. And that's, we have to be careful with that because I understand that there is no court that is funded to need. But it becomes more of an issue when you start getting lower on that scale down to 76% funded to need, or even now with the reductions down into the 60s. So I just wanted to make that point that there is a little bit of disparity there when it comes to the ability to actually complete the work. But the backlog will be horrendous for everyone.
Thank you, Nancy. So I'm trying to be very careful here. Judge Heinrichs, did you want to make another comment?
Yes, I do. And I guess I understand the need for unity as far as what this group goes. I certainly respect the comments of Judge Buckley. I just want to indicate that I am going to vote no on it because I think unless the legislature tells us to divide it on a workload basis, that our process should always be based on equity. In the matters, and it's just the way the courts are now. So as much as I'm not going to fall on a sword for it. I understand the arguments and respect each one of them, but I am going to be voting no because I think that when we are making the decisions on how to divide money, that equity should be our first look at matters. And if the legislature tells us differently, or if then I would, and I think that may have been part of the discussions the last time there was a straight pro rata with some of the money, that's why I'm going to vote no. I think that's our principles as a judicial branch, and I feel strongly about that. So supporting everybody, believe that respect their decisions, but I just wanted to make sure that I made that comment.
And so, Judge Heinrichs, what I'll do a little differently when we do get to a vote on this, I'll do a roll call so everybody has an individual chance. Anybody else before we get to that? So the motion
Judge Conklin, I think John Wardlaw actually wanted to speak.
Oh, John, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Judge. So the only one point I wanted to make is because we don't have data that specifically identifies where the workload is, it's absolutely certain at a minimum, probably much more is needed than $50 million. But because we don't have that data, it from an accountability standpoint, should the committee want to have something wired in it that something to the effect of after 30 days, each court would certify to the effect that these dollars are being used for COVID-related backlog, I think that would provide some level of assurance or accountability to others who may be looking and saying, well, the dollars went out, but there is no actual basis for where the actual, you know, workload resides might kind of quell that energy should be out there.
So, John, are you suggesting that we wouldn't even need to provide data points? We would just say that broadly, that the court simply certifies that the money received is utilized for COVID workload backlog?
Yeah. My concern is that in absence of that, there may be questions about where the workload resides and that the dollars didn't go out accordingly. And so to counter that, building an accountability factor that says within a certain period of time, courts have certified that these dollars for use for that very specific purpose might help.
Kim Turner, did you want to make a comment? I'm just trying to follow the log.
I just want to renew my earlier objection. Unless, John, what you're telling us is that you're hearing something in the Capitol about, you know, how the legislature is looking for more accountability around this, or the governor is. I don't see the value in court saying I used the money for COVID. If that's all we're going to say, it feels like half a loaf to me. If you want the courts to say we processed X number of this, that, and the next thing, that's one thing, and that would be burdensome, and I hope we don't end up there. But I don't see the value in just saying, yes, I, you know, raise my right hand and say I spent this money on COVID-related, impacts. I don't see what that gets you or gets us or gets the branch, except maybe an invitation to say, well, what were those impacts and how many, you know. I don't want to invite a conversation about quantifying what we're doing, because that will just take us away from the business of doing the work. That's just my two cents.
Judge, I'm going to let John Wardlaw respond to that, but then Judge Margin just wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, no, I certainly appreciate that perspective, Kim. And so the comments that I've heard out of the legislature, there was question about, the $50 million and whether or not that was the right number, whether $30 million is the right number, $60 million or $70 million, and a general lack of understanding about where the workload is and whether or not this is the right amount given the extent of cuts being made, painful cuts statewide. You know, they're trying to figure out, you know, is 30 the right number, is 50 the right number? And so I know there's interest in making sure that that every dollar that's going out these days has an accountability behind it, and they just seem to not have a good understanding or that the $50 million was the right number. So to the extent that there is a acknowledgement by the courts that these dollars were absolutely used for this purpose might help to alleviate any concern or question of whether the dollars were used for the intended purpose. That's it.
Judge Marginis.
Thank you. And I agree with Kim's last point. I think history teaches that the legislature is not shy about requiring that the court account for a funding allocation if it has a concern. And they didn't do it here. And I think to on our own volunteer, that information would invite, well, I don't want to call it opening a can of worms, but it would lead us down a road that we don't really need to go down. So I would, to the extent that this is offered as a friendly amendment, I would oppose it. Thank you.
So just sort of shooting from the hip, which gets me in trouble sometimes, and I was a little struck by John Wardlaw's comment that there might be somebody wondering, is this enough? Would we include language to say that based upon the trial court budget advisory committee with the advice of budget services and Leah and her group agrees unanimously that while the $50 million is much appreciated, it will take additional funds to adequately account for the COVID-related workload. I don't want to create, in the flip side, I don't want to create the impression that $50 million will do it, because I don't think it will. So could we accomplish the purpose by saying very, very deferentially that the trial courts by this vote do not mean to imply that less than $50 million, or stated another way, that more than $50 million will not be needed to appropriately address the backlog?
This is Judge Marginis. I think that is also going to lead us to a place I don't think we want to be, because some of the more skeptical legislators might say, well, why isn't that enough, and how did you spend the $50 million? And then we have to come up with the kind of numbers that we're, I think we should avoid. Thank you.
Judge Conklin?
Yeah, David?
David here. Yeah, thank you. So the only point that I would also add is that the branch has been extremely responsive to inquiries that have come in. I mean, we do it every winter when we update our snapshots about things and challenges that we've encountered. We can provide, I'm very confident, sufficient information that demonstrates really good use of the money, and also identify situations where perhaps it's come up short of what our needs are. So I think everybody should be aware, certainly from CX perspective, that courts should be considerate of just keeping track locally, internally, of how those resources have been helpful in the event that we have to ask for more, or we would like to ask for more. So we can do that. We've been through it. But to make it a condition of receiving the money, I think it does open up a page in the history books that we probably want to stay away from, and that is to detail every dollar that we have spent, and especially if it's not necessary. We can rally very quickly and put together some pretty solid information if such a request is made.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Judge Barton.
Was the language that Mr. Wardlaw was discussing, that we would certify and provide all the data and backup for the use of the money, or that we would just certify it was used for COVID-related purposes in general, and not go through the enormous work that would be required to prepare the backup?
Thank you, Judge. This is John Wardlaw, and I would not suggest that we go down the rabbit hole of detail, but rather a general certification that the dollars were used for the intended purpose, and that's it.
And here's part of the reason why I think that may make sense, and that is there are a lot of competing interest groups now going over the allocations for the other branches, departments, agencies, programs, et cetera. And I think it's very encouraging that this money has been provided by both the governor and the legislature, and anything we can do to strengthen this greatly needed funding, I think, is in our favor.
Okay. So I understand. I see the actually very legitimate arguments on both sides, and I'm just trying to summarize them. One is, somebody just used the word rabbit hole, that we've learned from past experience that this if asked, this requires so many resources just to prove or use the resources for that purpose that it would detract from the task at hand. On the other hand, to paraphrase Judge Barton, if we do have interested parties looking in from the outside saying, well, hold on a minute here, we need money too, and we're being forced, is it in our best interest to at least have either a certification is probably too strong a word, or advisory note within to the trial courts upon receipt of the funding that obviously this funding is provided only for the purpose of COVID workload-related backlog, and by receiving the money, they're agreeing that that is how it's being used. So simply, here's the money, and by receiving the money, you are agreeing that the money you're receiving is being used solely for COVID-related backlog. Would that satisfy everybody's concern? Kim Turner?
Yeah, I think I've made my point, and if this is the will of the group, it certainly is not going to stop me from voting in favor of this motion.
So there's a motion that's been seconded. I don't know if there's a friendly amendment. If not, I'll make it, that the motion include that trial courts be informed that upon receipt of the money, they are agreeing upon receipt of the money that this money will be used for COVID-related workload backlog. COVID backlog workload.
Judge Conklin, I'll make that friendly amendment if you don't want to.
I'll take the heat. I'll take the heat for it. I'll make the friendly amendment. So who made the initial motion? David?
Yes.
Do you have any objection to that amendment?
No objection.
Who seconded?
I did. No objection. No objection.
Okay. So it's been moved and seconded that the money be distributed pro rata to all trial courts, and that the trial courts be advised upon receipt of the funds that the funds are to be used solely, and they are agreeing that the funds are used solely for COVID-related backlog workload.
Judge, I think you have a question. Judge Thompson?
Thompson, did you have a question?
I did. Upon receipt of the funds, I think everybody has backlog in this fiscal year that we're in. Are we talking prospectively certification only into the next fiscal year?
No, this is one time.
So it can include all of the backlog that every single court has included or incurred already.
Oh, I think it does. I think that's exactly what it is. I don't think there's any court right now that has not already suffered backlog workload related to COVID and the amounts they'll receive. But yeah, it's a one-time. Okay.
I just want to be clear that it's almost like a backfill plus perspective, because I think we have it in the back, and I think we have it perspective trying to catch up. That's all.
Any additional comments?
Judge Conklin, Chris Rule, can I ask one question? I think this is mostly for John Wordlaw. If we include that kind of sort of public acknowledgement by trial courts that this will be used for COVID-19 related backlog, could that potentially negatively impact courts' efforts to get reimbursement for COVID-related expenses through FEMA?
I don't think so. The FEMA reimbursement process is really on its own track, and so I don't foresee. And the FEMA process tends to be quite lengthy in nature. So as the legislature moves forward and approves this appropriation, monies would go out for COVID-related backlog, and then downstream as the FEMA dollars come in, I would expect that those dollars, and what I'm seeing for the most part, it is tied to what types of things are courts doing to ensure that the public is safe, that the access to justice continues. I don't think those two would be blended from the standpoint of the legislature pulling dollars back. Hopefully that's responsive to your question.
Yes, thank you.
Judge Conklin, this is Mike Planet. Can I jump in?
Sure.
So yeah, so you know, we're talking about data points and all that, and I was looking at the report that we've been sending in on COVID-19 related expenses that we've already incurred, and I would suggest that based on that, probably spent most of the $50 million, if not all of it, already.
Yourself.
I have no problem signing anything, raising my hand, dedicating my, you know, the next generation of planets to certify that money will certainly be spent if it hasn't already been spent.
We have a new phrase.
Judge Conklin, if I might, just one more point. And it's been pretty clear that the intent here, and we have characterized it as a branch, we have a tsunami of workload that is tied directly to COVID and the slowing down of the processes on a statewide basis. On that, based on that understanding, I think there's an expectation that there are people out there directly being impacted by a slowed down system, and that these dollars would go to help those folks have their moment of in court expedited, and so to the extent that we're talking about workload that's already been cleared and folks who have already through a variety of management means been addressed. I think the intent of the legislature is that, as I said, tsunami of workload, those people that are directly being impacted and slowed down from their day in court are going to be positively impacted. So it's not so much a retro, but it's a prospective, getting that workload done as quickly as possible to help the people of California.
And that's a great point. And actually, I think they go hand in hand. I think by the money coming in and being used, whether it is to take care of, to quote Mike Planet, what's already happened, then frees up resources to address the tsunami that you talked about that we know is still coming. So I think the two do play very well together. I don't think this should be interpreted in any way by the trial courts to say, okay, that solves a problem for us. We took care of everything, because all this money is going to do is allow us to continue to the phrase we all strive for, access to justice. And whereas before, with additions, it's been enhance access to justice, I think now it's to protect access to justice. And this will allow the trial courts to continue to protect access to justice based upon COVID-related backlog workload. Okay. So with that, I did note earlier I would do a roll call. So, Brandy, could I ask you, unless there's any further discussion, for a roll call vote on the motion?
Yes, but not discussion, Judge. Before we move on to the roll call, can I ask a few clarifying questions, please, on the pending motion?
Yes.
The first is, would it be a pro rata allocation based on need, similar to what we are putting together for the prior item?
David?
Yeah, I think that's appropriate, just to maintain consistency.
Thank you.
Judge Gabe, do you agree with your second?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Are we including Cluster 1 courts?
David? I think we have to.
I think one-time monies, we've always treated that as monies that go to everyone.
Right.
Thank you. And just, I don't mean to be redundant, but I want to just make sure for our clarification purposes, are we also then including the base funding floor courts?
Well, there's two funding floor courts?
Yes.
Are either of those courts funded at, I'm just looking right now, and I hate to rely on numbers, but I'm looking at percentages here. One's at 185%, am I correct? And the other's at 275%?
Right, based on the $800,000 amount approved by the council is what is needed for each court to be able to operate. There is a separate process in place for those courts to request additional funding for approval by the council, but that process doesn't kick off until about December.
So for purposes of clarity, Judge Conklin, I would, I don't know if I amend my original motion, I would exclude those courts, given the fact that they're well above 100% funding.
Judge Gabe, you agree in your second?
Yeah, I'll agree.
Judge Conklin, John Wardlaw, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. If I might, given the unique challenges associated with COVID, unless folks are confident that those courts have not experienced some level of backlog, I'd be concerned about that approach, because really this is about not equity. This is about courts not being able to serve their populations because of a slowdown with this virus. And so
Okay. If
those courts are not in a slowdown mode, I think you're on safe ground. But if they do have backlogs directly related to a slowdown, then I think this money is intended for all.
Then just to clarify, and I think maybe we solve the problem, but if we just base it on need, then each of those courts is going to get about $5,000, right? So I think that solves the problem if we include Cluster 1 not on their allocation, but on their need. Would you agree, David?
Yeah, and I think that resolves it, quite honestly.
Kim? Judge Gabe?
Agreed.
Brandy, is that clear enough? So the Cluster 1 courts are included. The allocation is based upon their need.
Mm-hmm. Yep, clear. Judge, thank you. Thank you, everyone.
John, do you think that Mr. Wardlaw, do you think that makes sure that we're inclusive enough?
Yeah, I think so, Judge. Thank
Great.
You.
Okay.
Judge Conklin, this might be tricky.
I heard Kim Turner, and then I'll go to Judge Buckley. Kim Turner?
Actually, I did not have a comment for a change.
I do. The other Kim does. We'll take
Go
Kim.
Ahead.
Just for clarification, with the amendment that just occurred with these for the Cluster 1s, everybody else is based on allocation. So we have a different application of how people get their share of the money, correct?
Yeah,
no, Kim,
candidly,
Kim,
yes. Go ahead,
Randy. As I understand it, everyone will receive a pro rata distribution based on need.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's based on need. And it clarifies that includes Cluster 1 courts based upon need. Judge Buckley, did you have a comment?
It's a ticky-tack comment. Don't we want to say workload formula need? Because when I first heard you say need,
sure.
I thought you were talking about their COVID
Great.
Need.
Great clarification.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. With that, I'm going to ask Brandy to take a roll call. Unless, Brandy, do you need any further clarification?
I do not. Thank you very much.
All right. I'm going to ask Brandy to take a roll call. Simply a yes means you agree, you vote for the motion. A no means you oppose. Brandy?
Judge Conklin?
Yes.
Ms. Fleming?
Yes.
Judge Barton?
Yes.
Judge Buckley?
Yes.
Judge Cope is absent. Judge Fannin?
Yes.
Judge Gabe?
Yes.
Judge Heinrichs?
No.
Judge Kelly?
Yes.
Judge Marginis?
Yes.
Judge Bryan?
Yes.
Judge Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Bartleson?
No.
Ms. Carter?
I received a text. Sherry had an emergency and had to drop off.
Ms. Eberhardt?
Yes.
Mr. Finke?
Yes.
Mr. Landry?
Yes.
Mr. Planet?
Yes.
Mr. Rule?
Yes.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Yes.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes.
Ms. Turner?
Yes.
And Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, motion carries. Okay. So that, as we move through the agenda, addresses, and Brandy, have we done everything necessary on action item 5, which is number 7 on our list?
We have not. We've only covered of the many items that make up item 5. Similar to the IMS presentation in item 4, there's quite a bit of detail that we have prepared to close out this item.
Okay, so Oksana, do you want to come back to us and summarize the remaining necessary recommendations in this action item?
Absolutely. Can I begin?
Of course, please.
Good afternoon again, everyone. Oksana Tak, Senior Budget Analyst with Budget Services. Presenting to TIGBEC for consideration the preliminary 2020-21 allocations totaling $2.2 billion from the Child Court Trust Fund, $68.8 million in General Fund for Employee Benefits, $50 million in Immediate and Critical Needs Account for support for operations of the trial courts, and workload formula allocation in the amount of $2 billion. I would like to begin by directing your attention to Attachment 5A on page 55 of the materials and go over the base, discretionary, and non-discretionary funding for the following five programs. The RME, which is an acronym for Revenue and Expenditure, Subcommittee Recommendation for the Judicial Council staff totals $3.8 million. and line 64 of the attachment, which details on the programs included reflected in lines 37 through 43. The subcommittee recommendation includes use of unrestricted TCDF fund balance to pay back a $491,000 general fund loan provided to support the implementation and administration of the e-filing program by the due date of June 30, 2020, per provisions in the 2018 Budget Act, in the event fee revenue is insufficient. Should the TCTF fund balance be used to repay any or all of the loan, the e-filing fee revenue upon program implementation will be used to repay the TCTF in the amount utilized for repayment of the loan. Next, TCTF base and R&E subcommittee recommendation for support for operation and child court totals $1.85 billion in line 65, which includes a net reduction of $32.8 million in 2019-20 allocation adjustment reflected in lines 3, 4, and 5. Other allocations of $11.8 million shown in line 12 and 13, a net reduction of $72.9 million in new or change allocation shown in line 16 through 22, as well as R&E recommendation totaling $42.7 million for allocation for reimbursement for this program shown in lines 46 through 52. Now, court-appointed dependency counsel totals $148.9 million in line 27, reflecting finding changes proposed in the 2020-21 merit revision and assumes kickback recommendation to the Judicial Council as presented under item 1 of today's meeting agenda. Next, in line 34 is court interpreted program recommendation in the amount of $124.4 million. This includes the base of $120.7 million and funding changes proposed in the 2020-21 May revision. Please see lines 30 through 33. Lastly, R&E subcommittee recommendation for expenses on behalf of the child courts, totaling $21.2 million in line 61, with details on the programs included display in line 55 through 60. That reflects a funding reduction of $963,000 to the State Controller's Office audits of the trial courts included in the May revision. Now moving on to the workload formula allocation in attachment 5B on pages 56 through 58 of the materials. The workload calculation includes allocations, revenues, and adjustments for a total of $2 billion in the workload allocation. Column A details by court the adjusted base allocation presented in attachment 5A in line 10. Columns B, C, and D detail non-base adjustments used to calculate the workload allocation, including the automated record keeping and micrographics, 2% automation replacement funds, and self-help. In addition, columns E through H detail base adjustments, which are the exclusion of costs related to security, court reporters in family law, and subordinate judicial officer adjustments. Now, changes to the allocation formula are detailed in columns K through V and include the following. Adjustment to the subordinate judicial officer allocation in column L, a change in automated record keeping and micrographics collection from the fiscal year 2017-18 to fiscal year 18-19 in column M, 2020-21 non-interpreted benefit cost change in column N, an allocation of $10 million in discretionary funding that was previously designated for court reporters in family law in 2018-19 in column O, criminal adjustment justice realignment funding, which was previously outside of the workload allocation in column P. Revenue collected in 2018-19 in column Q. Remaining support for the new judgeship of $4.8 million in columns R through T, which includes a $98,925 reduction for non-sheriff security that is allocated outside the workload allocation shown in column AA. Next in column V is 2020-21 workload funding floor adjustment, which includes funding floor allocations for two courts, Alpine and Sierra Superior Courts, which with all other courts sharing pro rata in the reduction to cover the funding floor allocation. The funding floor adjustment may change based on the final appropriation included in the 2020 Budget Act. And some other allocations are shown in columns D through AE, which include $50 million funding for COVID-19 filing backlog, 2020-21 cannabis conviction and sentencing funding, and telephonic appearances. We also have a number of pending allocation items. First, due to the timing, preliminary reduction for trial courts reserved about the 3% cap will not be available for TIGBAC consideration prior to the Judicial Council meeting in July. However, final allocation reduction will be considered by TIGBAC prior to recommendation to the Judicial Council at its meeting before January 2021. Second, the allocation of money using the council-approved formula collected through the Dependency Council Collection Program will be brought to the TIGBAC and Council once final 2019-20 collections are known. And pending various revenue distribution as required by statute or authorized charges for the cost of the programs or cash advances. In addition, there are also a few caveats. Any changes on the appropriation provided to the final 2020 Budget Act may impact the allocations presented today. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, final PCTF allocation amount in the 2020-21 will be based on available state revenues and final budget decisions. Some modification might be necessary based on state revenue reductions and priority changes. Also, the $10 million in urgent needs funding assumes no allocation in 2020-21. If money are allocated in 2020-21, courts would need to replenish the money up to what was allocated by the Council from their 2021-22 base allocation. Lastly, so a committee member can be assured that TCTF has sufficient funds to support all requests. Let's look at attachment 5C, which displays the current trial court trust fund condition statement on page 59 of the materials. It is projected for 2020-21 to have an ending fund balance of $56.9 million in column E, row 28, of which approximately $28.4 million is restricted in row 30 and $28.5 million in row 31 is unrestricted projected balance at the end of 2020-21. Therefore, TCDF is anticipated to have adequate funds to support the 2020-21 proposed preliminary allocation. The committee's recommendation today will be presented to the Judicial Council for approval during its scheduled business meeting in July. That concludes our final presentation. Budget Service Management and program staff are available to assist in answering any questions.
Oksana, thank you so much. So in summary, folks, this means the recommendation set forth beginning in the middle of page 50 all the way through page 54, including the attachments, are the ones subject to this action item. Any questions for Oksana or staff?
I think this table includes the previous recommendation regarding the spread of the COVID funds. And so it would have to be recalculated, is that correct? Based on the decision we just made?
Yeah, the $50 million will stay the same. You're right. But the allocation of that $50 million will be different than is shown on column AC within the chart. So I would agree with Judge Barton that the column AC will be modified to be consistent with the recommendation today.
And I think that would also potentially be the case with the total adjustment for each court, depending on what we do next Thursday afternoon.
Right, that's column U is in Union in the yellow. That as well, the $168 million will stay the same, but the allocation up to a specific court will be modified based upon the decision made at our next meeting. Does that, Exana and staff, does that give you the clarification you need? That is, again, column U and column AC. AC will be changed by the decision made today, and column U will be modified according to the decision made at the next TCBAC meeting.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Judge Barton.
Judge Conklin, can I raise a question?
Of course.
So this is David. One of the things that I did notice a reference to was the anticipated shortfall in the interpreter's services line item, which is program 4545. I know we're going to be taking up that item here shortly. Does it foretell what we're going to be doing by approving this action or the budget that's been included on this document? Because it does make a reflection of a reduction in the funding to the interpreter's account. And I think we were prepared to make a recommendation on how to go forward, and that would involve a kind of a description of the fund condition. And should we take up that item before we approve this particular item, or does it matter?
So that's a valid point. The court interpreter funding shortfall is an item on our agenda for today. It's an action item. If that specific amount is included in this, then I would tend to agree that either we need to defer that amount or defer a final discussion on this action item until we conclude that action item. Oksana or staff, do you have a position on that?
This is Brandy. I'll just add that what is in the TCTF fund condition statement is showing an expenditure up to the appropriation amount that does include the reduction.
What does that mean?
David, the thought is that the ad hoc subcommittee and later recommendation on the court interpreter program would include possible usage of the TCTF to make up any shortfall, then that number would change. If the approach is to discuss an allocation methodology within the amount of money that we currently have, then we would be okay to move forward.
Okay, so we can speak to that item if you want, Judge, just to kind of provide a little bit of background.
All right, let's do that just to put this in appropriate perspective. So we're jumping ahead, folks. So we're going to move now to the – I'm just making sure we're all – that. This is action item 8 with Cottrell. And I don't know, David, if you want Cottrell to just jump in and summarize it quickly, or if you think whatever you –
Well, I think it would be appropriate to get some of the foundational information that Cottrell can provide. And then
Cottrell, are you with us?
I am. Good afternoon, everyone.
Great. So, folks, I know we're sort of – and we're getting close to 2 o'clock. I appreciate everybody's patience. I don't think it's any surprise. We knew we might go a little bit beyond, but we'll be efficient. So we're now going to keep this action in play. That is the conclusion of action item 5, and now we're going to move to action item 6 so the two can be concluded together. Cottrell?
Okay. I'll keep it as brief as I can. Item 6 of today's agenda is the consideration of FMS's recommendation to address the $6 million general fund reduction proposed in the 2021 May revision and a projected 2021 shortfall in the court interpreter program. As many of you recall who are on FMS, when FMS met this last February, the plan was to address the 2021 projected shortfall of $11.1 million. FMS's planned recommendation at that time was to use the trial court trust fund fund balance to address the shortfall. However, due to the budget implications of COVID-19 and the May revision, FMS met again this past week on June 2nd to revisit its recommendation from the February meeting to take these items into consideration. The projected expenditures and program balance information displayed on pages 61 and 62 have been updated to incorporate the most current information available. And as you will note on page 62 of the materials, the 2021 estimated program balance now reflects a shortfall of $17.4 million, which does increase to $23 million in fiscal year 21-22. The plan to address the projected shortfall, FMS's recommendation is that TIGBAC consider deferring actions to reduce the court interpreter program reimbursement to trial courts until TIGBAC's August meeting for consideration by the Judicial Council at its September meeting. This ultimately will allow the Interpreter Ad Hoc Subcommittee additional time to develop an allocation reduction methodology that addresses the shortfall, and will give them time to inform courts that reductions are imminent due to the state's economic downturn, and that courts should prepare or anticipate for reduction in funding after the first quarter of next fiscal year, so fiscal year 2021. And after that, I'll open it up for any questions or further discussion.
All right, David.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Cottrell. Nicely done, and Judge Conklin. So there are a couple elements that I think are important to bring up. One, in the fall of this budget year, we were advised that the fund condition of the Interpreters Fund was going to be in deficit. And in conjunction with that, we made recommendations at the time to move forward with reducing the amount of monies that would be available to courts for interpreter services. And traditionally, this particular fund is made available to courts on a reimbursement basis, not on an allocation basis, but on a reimbursement basis. The proposal that we had been considering, and there was a subcommittee that was formed, I